I'll be speaking Saturday night at UC Berkeley, 6 o'clock. Check our website on the occupation of Western Sahara. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is your evening news. KBOO programming is made possible by KABU member listeners and support from the Rose City Chocolate Festival, May 4th and 5th at the Doubletree Hotel by Hilton in the Lloyd District, featuring handcrafted work from local and national chocolate makers, including milk chocolate, dark chocolate, specialty bars, truffles, toffee, and more. Open to the public and family-friendly. Tickets and more information are available online at rosecitychocolate.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, the Oregon National Guard is defying President Donald Trump's ban in trans soldiers in the military.
A bill toughening vaccination opt-outs is moving through the Oregon legislature.
And Londoners believe a new mural by Banksy in support of the climate rebellion has been found at the base of the iconic Marble Arch.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 26, 2019. I'm Red Stumpdown.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Residents living along the Columbia River Gorge reported this week that the Cape Horn cliffs on the Washington side of the river, across from Rooster Rock, have been tagged with graffiti. Friends of the Columbia Gorge have already volunteered to help with the cleanup, and they advise anyone who sees graffiti in the gorge to alert law enforcement officials. The nonprofit reports that protects the gorge and has contacted the U.S. Forest Service, which is working on a plan to respond. The Cape Horn cliffs are a majestic 500-foot-high basalt outcropping that travelers for the past 100 years have called Gibraltar.
Oregon is one of five states that is defying President Donald Trump's ban on transgendered soldiers serving in the military. The governor of our state, plus Washington, California, Nevada, and New Mexico, are banding together to create policy allowing trans soldiers to serve in National Guard units. Trump in 2017 started tweeting threats against trans soldiers, but the trans ban wasn't made official until last year. On Tuesday, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Trump's ban, which prompted the states to step up and take a stand. Last January, Oregon Governor Kate Brown, known as the first bisexual governor in U.S. history, first raised her objection to the trans ban.
A statewide ban on single-use plastic bags has cleared the Oregon House of Representatives and now goes to the Senate. State senators voted 42-18 yesterday to ban large retailers and grocery stores from offering plastic checkout bags statewide. Stores are able to offer recycled paper bags and reusable plastic bags for a 5-cent fee. The bill also includes a preemption clause that prevents cities from imposing higher fees. Republicans complain the move limits consumer choice and that those decisions should be left to local communities to decide. Many Oregon cities have already banned plastic checkout bags. If this bill passes, Oregon would be the third state to ban plastic shopping bags. The legislature is also considering bans on plastic straws and styrofoam to-go containers.
The Joint Committee on Ways and Means in the Oregon State Legislature voted 13-7 today in support of a bill requiring tougher rules for childhood vaccinations. Now the bill advances to the House for more debate. The bill would make routine childhood vaccinations a condition of attending Oregon public schools unless a student has a doctor's note. In Oregon and nationally, measles is raging at its highest rate since 1994, and measles was thought to be eradicated in 2000 before vaccination rates dropped so low they triggered the current epidemic. Oregon is one of 14 states allowing families to opt out of immunizations for personal, philosophical, and religious beliefs. Under the proposed bill, families could only claim medical exemptions to vaccines. Unvaccinated children would still be able to attend online school under the bill, but they could not go to in-person school-related activities. At least 77 people have been diagnosed with measles as a part of an outbreak in Oregon and Washington State. Nearly all of those infected were completely unvaccinated. Washington state lawmakers voted Tuesday to remove parents' ability to claim a personal or philosophical exemption from vaccinating their children for measles, although medical and religious exemptions will still remain.
Multnomah County Animal Services is gearing up for kitten season with calls for more foster kitten volunteers and financial contributions for their kitten triage program. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Jay Levitri about how you can support the littlest felines.
Every spring, we have what we call kitten season, and it's the time of year when kittens are born in gangbusters just all throughout our community. It's spring, animals are being born, and that can create some pretty significant organizational challenges on our shelter, which is only able to accommodate so many animals at a time. So several years ago, we came up with a program called the Kitten Triage Program, and it's developed so we have staff and resources available to care for kittens the moment they come through the door. And we give them everything they need from flea medication to parasite medication to some of the vaccines they need if they're old enough. And we make sure that they're warm and that they're fed and they're cleaned. A lot of them have lost their mothers. And then we send them off to our foster volunteers in the community to raise the kittens until they're big enough to be spayed or neutered, and then later adopted out or sent to our partners in the community for adoption.
Okay, so right now you're raising funds for the kitten program, but you also have volunteers. How can our listeners support you and participate with you in the work you do with kittens?
Yes, we're currently, as you pointed out, we are raising funds for this kitten triage program. It is not yet funded by the Multnomah County General Fund, and so all of the program costs, which are about $75,000, comes out of our donations for medical care. And we have a special fund called the Kitten Triage Fund that basically pays for all the surgeries, the medications, and a staff position for a part of the year. And so we do urge you to make a donation. If you're able, you can visit our website at multicopets.org. We are also interested in having volunteers who can become foster parents for these kittens. We have a volunteer orientation on the fourth Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. here at our Troutdale shelter. We would encourage you to come. And if you're unable to do those things, if you don't have the monetary capacity or the time capacity to do those things, we urge you to learn more about it and spread the word to your friends. Build some awareness about the need of kittens in the community, promoting spay-neuter services, and just raising some community awareness for what's actually happening with these animals and what they need to survive and thrive and also to control the population over time.
So if somebody's going to volunteer to be a foster parent for a kitten, what do they do?
Well, what we have is our foster coordinator. You'll receive all the necessary training and the supplies that you'll need to raise the animals. But as we get animals in, our foster coordinator sends out, you know, kind of a list of what's available. And if you have the time and the resources, you can volunteer to take on that animal for a period of time and care for them in your home. There are some intensive cases, such as bottle baby kittens who have lost their mothers. They require feedings and warmings and cleanings about every 3 to 4 hours. So it's kind of like having a newborn baby. They just require lots of attention and care on the clock. As soon as they're weaned off of a milk replacer, then they can go on to wet food and they require a little less care. And so we usually have some specialists who are taking care of the bottle babies, and then they can pass them on to other volunteers who really just want to socialize the kittens and meet their needs and make sure that they're growing up healthy till either be spayed or neutered and then adopted. Volunteer foster homes are really, you know, a huge piece in making sure that we can save those animals and that every animal has a place to go where they can be cared for.
Now, the kitten triage program actually starts on a certain date. Does it start May 1st?
Yes. So we're currently caring for some kittens, but we're gearing up to open what we call our kitten trailer. And it's a special converted medical trailer that's in back of the shelter, And it's a way for kittens who are brought in to bypass the regular shelter where they may be exposed to, you know, other contagious diseases or things like that. And so it's really just an area where we can give the kittens the immediate care that they need to be moved on to foster care.
Jay, I have to ask you, why does it matter? Why does it matter that we take good care of kittens?
I think it is a big reflection on ourselves as a society. You know, they're not disposable animals. These are animals who are deserving of our love and care, and we're responsible for them. Like you were saying, it's kind of a two-part system where we're trying to prevent unwanted litters of kittens from being born through our spay-neuter efforts through the Spay and Save program, which provides discounted spay or neuter surgeries, sometimes free spay and neuter surgeries. But then we also want to save the lives of the ones who are born, who are in the community, so they can receive the utmost care. A few years back, the euthanasia rates of shelters in the region was unacceptable, and that's partly what launched programs such as the Spay and Save program to reduce the overpopulation program, and also this kitten triage program, which just enables us to have the capacity to care for the kittens who come through the door. Before this program started, a lot of times when kittens would come to the shelter, there were not resources available to care for them. There weren't the staff members who could care for them. We didn't have the same foster network. We didn't have the capacity to give them the level of care that they require to survive and thrive. And many of them were just preemptively euthanized because there wasn't another way to take care of them. And we're really proud that our community has stepped up to fund this program, to participate in the Spay and Save program, so that in the Portland region, we're saving lives. We are the model for a lot of cities across the country.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Rise Up with Sonali Kolhatkar. And then at 7, it's The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather, a few clouds with lows around 44 degrees and an increasing chance of kittens. Tomorrow's weather, partly sunny with highs near 60 degrees. Today in history, in 1954, the polio vaccine was developed by Dr. Jonas Salk, who started field trials involving 1.8 million children at the Franklin Sherman Elementary School in McLean, Virginia. Within decades, polio vaccines almost wiped out the highly contagious disease in the Western Hemisphere. The quote of the day is from Jonas Salk, who said, quote, "If all of the insects were to disappear from the earth within 50 years, all of life on earth would end. If all human beings disappeared from the earth within 50 years, all life would flourish," end quote.
Lawmakers in California are moving toward passage of a law that would ban racial discrimination on the basis of hair texture and hairstyles in schools and workplaces. The bill is known as the Crown Act, which stands for Create a Respectful and Open Workplace for Natural Hair. California State Senator Holly J. Mitchell of Los Angeles introduced the bill to encourage racial inclusion in schools and businesses. The bill passed the Senate by an overwhelming margin on Monday and now heads to the State Assembly for further consideration. Mitchell said this week, quote, "I have heard far too many reports of black children humiliated and sent home from school because their natural hair was deemed unruly or a distraction to others. Last year, a youth referee at a wrestling match forced a teenaged competitor to allow his dreadlocks to be cut off at ringside in order to qualify for competition. In February, New York City put into effect a law protecting the rights of New Yorkers to, quote, maintain natural hair or hairstyles that are closely associated with their racial, ethnic, or cultural identities."
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick, in for Antonio Gonzalez. After several years of improvement, Montana's Native American graduation rate dropped slightly last year. That's according to Montana's new statewide school report card released this week. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
The Every Student Succeeds Act, ESSA for short, is the federal replacement for No Child Left Behind. Data from the last school year in the ESSA report shows 68% of Native students graduated within 4 years. That's down a point and a half from the prior year. Last year, the graduation rate for white students was 21 points higher than for Natives and improved by 0.3%. The drop in the Native American graduation rate comes after 5 years of growth, including a 3.5% spike in 2017. Overall, results in the statewide ESSA report card are a mixed bag.
That tells us aggregately that we can do better.
Elsie Arnson is Montana's state superintendent of public instruction.
But I know there are moments where we need to celebrate success as much as what it is that we can do better. Let's go ahead and put more emphasis on those ones that are almost there so we can carry them over the finish line. That's a success story that's going to be told next year when this report card goes out again.
Montana's ESSA plan calls for students who have historically scored the lowest in tests, students from poor families, English learners, kids with disabilities, and Native Americans to show the greatest academic improvement over the next several years.
That was Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien. A new advisory committee on Bears Ears National Monument in southern Utah is drawing flack from supporters of the monument, including Native Americans. The Salt Lake Tribune reports among the 15 people on the committee that will provide guidance on managing the reserve, there's no one who supported the original designation of the monument in 2016. However, there are plenty of opponents to the monument designation. Only two committee members are part of Native American tribes who consider the land to be sacred. Ryan Benally is a member of the Navajo Nation. He opposed the monument designation. He told the Deseret News in 2017 it hurts tribal communities. Alfred Ben is vice president of the Aneth chapter of the Navajo Nation. He also opposed the monument designation. In a 2017 opinion piece for The Hill, Ben wrote that his community would like to see lasting protections for the area rather than a presidential proclamation, and he argued only Congress can pass laws to do that. Gavin Noyes is executive director of Utah Dene Bekea. The tribal group developed the proposal that led to the monument's designation. He said other candidates with more expertise, such as his board member, Jonah Yellowman, were overlooked because they support the monument. President Barack Obama's proclamation creating the monument states the advisory committee should reflect a, quote, fair and balanced representation of interested stakeholders. The U.S. Navy and other officials will soon repatriate remains taken from the San Nicolas Island to at least four California tribes. The Ventura County Star reports excavations over more than a century sent artifacts and remains to museums and other collections. The federal government has been working with tribes since 2012 to identify, consolidate, and return all the items taken from the island, which the Navy now owns and manages. The tribes intend to return the remains to the island. Mark Macaro, chairman of the Pechanga Band of Luceño Indians, previously told the governor that the remains of their ancestors deserve the dignity of being reinterred and cared for under tribal custom and tradition. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick.
Members of the U.S. activist group Code Pink are occupying the Venezuelan embassy compound in Washington, D.C. That's at the request of the Venezuelan government. The Trump administration had evicted the Venezuelan diplomats formerly occupying the embassy, insisting that only appointees of the U.S.-designated coup leader Juan Guaido be allowed in the embassy to represent Venezuela. Eight members of Code Pink and Popular Resistance have been present in the embassy for the last 2 weeks, putting up posters and vowing to stay in order to thwart a U.S.-led civil war or invasion in Venezuela. Media Benjamin, a leader of Code Pink, has been present at the embassy and says that she has observed men surveilling the grounds, perhaps in an effort to prepare for forcibly removing the protesters. The occupying group calls themselves the Embassy Protection Collective and has a page on Facebook under that name. U.S. Special Envoy for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, who was famously involved in the failed coup attempt against Hugo Chavez in Caracas, says that the occupiers are clearly violating the law. But the protesters say that they are there at the extended invitation of the legitimate government in Venezuela and are thus legally present under U.S. and municipal laws.
President Donald Trump said today he will revoke the United States status as signatory of the UN Arms Trade Treaty. The treaty regulates international trade in conventional weapons, including small arms, battle tanks, combat aircraft, and warships. In a speech before the National Rifle Association in Indianapolis, Indiana, Trump described the weapons treaty as misguided. President Barack Obama signed the pact in 2013, but it has never been ratified by U.S. lawmakers. Trump made the announcement as he vowed to fight for gun rights and implored members of the nation's largest pro-gun group struggling to maintain its influence to rally behind his re-election bid. Trump said, quote, "It's under assault, but not while we're here," end quote. In a related story, the Associated Press reported today that pro-gun legislation is stalled in Congress.
On a beautiful day like this, it's only natural to be thinking about swimming, fishing, and boating, but plants that don't belong in our waters can interfere with all that. It's time for the Current Cast with Sandra Kepner.
Holding the invaders at bay on this Current Cast. When a new plant moves into a lake or stream, take note, it could be cause for concern. Sandra Kepner with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says that rapidly spreading invasive plants like water chestnut and hydrilla are causing big problems for New York waters.
We see virtually the elimination of our native plant species as these species grow up and take over.
And in shallow waters, they can interfere with swimming, fishing, and boating. So if you see a new plant growing in the water, call your local conservation agency. They can determine whether it's invasive and help remove it if necessary. Early action is the best way to keep these invaders out of the Great Lakes. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, supported by New York's Environmental Protection Fund and Sea Grant, online at currentcast.org.
London's climate extinction activists, who shut down the city with protests last week, have announced that they are running a slate of candidates in the European elections. Together, they are calling themselves the, quote, Climate Emergency Independents. Nine candidates in London and southwest England are running for election and balloting scheduled for May 23rd. The group said it was inspired by the mass civil disobedience demonstrations on the streets of London over the past 2 weeks, as well as by Greta Thunberg and the global school strikes movement she inspired, which also sent thousands of marchers into the streets of Portland.
A mural has emerged this week on a London bridge in support of the climate extinction protests, and it's now being thought to have been painted by Banksy. The piece was found stenciled with spray paint in Banksy's famous style on the Marble Arch, a bridge that had been occupied by climate activists throughout the climate rebellion. The mural features a little girl holding a tiny sign with the Extinction Rebellion logo and planting a sprout in the earth. The sign reads, "From this moment, despair ends and tactics begin." A spokesperson for the municipal council said the work had not yet been authenticated. Banksy, of course, did not respond to a request for comment.
2 weeks after President Trump lamented that his troops could not get rough with refugees at the U.S.-Mexico border, the Pentagon has announced that it plans to request waivers to allow some U.S. troops to interact directly with border crossers. General Terence O'Shaughnessy, in charge of North America operations, says U.S. troop deployments at the border will operate with respect to the Posse Comitatus law. That law states that the military cannot be used as law enforcement within the borders of the United States. The waivers would allow 300 cooks, drivers, and lawyers to fudge that rule, thereby relieving pressure on the Border Patrol and Immigration and Customs Enforcement personnel. The military is still so sensitive about violating Posse Comitatus that it will require the drivers to be sealed away from refugees as they drive so that there is technically no contact between them and the people they transport. The request comes from the Trump Department of Homeland Security and is expected to be signed today by Patrick Shanahan, Acting Defense Secretary. The expected change comes as Trump's Get Tough policy on the southern border backfired. Trump's announcements that he would like to close the border panicked would-be migrants and led to a surge of people desperate to get across while it was still possible. 103,000 migrants appeared at the border last month, the highest total in a decade.
Sad news out of Mozambique, where that country has been hit by a new cyclone. The storm called Kenneth underwent rapid intensification as it approached, expanding in power from Category 1 to Category 4 in just 24 hours. The storm moved north of the provincial capital, Pemba, as its winds dropped from 140 miles per hour to 85 miles per hour. Mozambique was already reeling from unprecedented devastation brought by last month's cyclone Idai, worst storm in that country in a century. Idai dumped so much rain that it created a new body of water. Cyclone Kenneth is also bringing catastrophic rains as much as 40 inches in some areas as it moves slowly across the region. 30,000 of the 700,000 people in Cyclone Kenneth's path have been evacuated, but it is feared that a high death toll will emerge as rescue efforts get underway. As sustained heavy rainfall continues over the next 48 hours, Maselo River may flood its banks, creating greater destruction.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 26, 2019. This is a volunteer and kitten-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking kittens and news, stories, and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Joe Meyer and Teresa Mitchell. The engineer is Ray Bodwell. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Red Stumptown.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 a.m., more talk radio with Cecil and Celeste. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour talks labor militancy, strikes, employer retaliation, and Occupy ICE. At 10 on Locus Focus, host Barbara Bernstein talks with Mia Reback, lobbyist with the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network, about why climate activists are taking direct action against Zenith Energy. At 11, Radio Zine talks to comedian Mo Welch about her new book, How to Die Alone. Then at 11:30, This Way Out brings you global LGBTQ news. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. We certainly can't do it without you. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. Have a great night and a great weekend, Red, and a great weekend, Ray, and a great weekend to all kittens everywhere.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 37th Annual Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Oregon Potters Association's 37th Annual Ceramic Showcase and Sale features work by over 150 Oregon Potters Association members. It is one of the largest all-ceramic artist shows in the country, and the showcase features sculptures, wall art, jewelry, tiles, functional pottery, and more. Again, that's the Oregon Ceramic Showcase, Friday, April 26th through Sunday, April 28th at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, coverage of the resignation of Homeland Security Chief Kirstjen Nielsen showcased imperial court intrigue and how craven one can be and still be dubbed a grown-up in the room. Media interested in Nielsen's soft landing, will she get to make the seven-figure salary God intends for ex-officials? Will she have pleasant dining out experiences? Might have spent more time on the victims of the policies she oversaw. Victims like Laura Maradiaga, an 11-year-old girl the government is trying to deport alone to El Salvador due to a backlogged court's clerical error. The immigration